Okay, Genesis chapter 25, and we'll be looking at the entire chapter, but not reading the entire chapter as a whole. But the first part of the chapter we find there about Abraham, and it talks about how Abraham remarries after Sarah dies, and then Abraham, he dies in verse number 5, and then on down through until we get down to about verse number 19, and we pick up with Isaac's life and his marriage with Rebekah. And that's really where we're going to begin. You know, I want to begin tonight by reading some little prayers by children as they were praying about family problems. All right, these are children praying about family problems. The first child prayed, "God, I bet it is very hard to love everyone in the whole world. There are only 4 people in our family, and I'm having a hard time loving all them." And then another little boy prayed, "Maybe Cain and Abel would have not killed each other if they had their own rooms. That is what my mom did for me and my brother." Then one more. This one's a good one. Sounds like a little girl. She says, "Please send me a new baby. Send a new baby for mommy. The baby you sent last week cries too much." Every family has problems, some a little bit more serious than some of those. But children are so transparent. And that does us good to think of, you know, some of their transparent thoughts on family problems. But as we look in Isaac and Rebekah's situation, we find in their lives 4 family problems that took place in their family. And from these, we can glean some things, truths that can help us. And, you know, not every one of them is going to fit every one of our situations, but there's principles from these that we can gain from that can be of help to us. And we find, first of all, in verse number 19, it says, and these are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah to wife, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian. And Isaac entreated the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord was entreated of him, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Now, let's just stop and look at that. The first problem that they had there is Sarah was not conceiving like they desired. And as you read through the passage, we find here that when she actually gives birth to him, Isaac is 60 years old. So how long had he been praying? Been praying for 20 years. Been praying for 20 years that his wife would have a baby. And as you look at this, you know, Isaac longed for a son, and Rebekah very likely did too. You know, in those days especially, and gratefully it's not that way today, but in those days it was a shame for a woman not to have children. And so that was a very difficult thing. Remember Sarah, she longed for a child for years. I think it was about 25 years that she waited before she conceived and had a child. And it was a great grief to her heart. And she was 90 years old when she finally had her first child. And then Rachel and Hannah, 2 other women in the Bible, both of them wept and cried over the fact that they could not have children. And it was a very difficult thing for them. But, you know, as we think about this, God does not tell us why he withheld children from Rebekah, or from these other ladies, or for anyone for that matter. God does not tell us why, but one thing that's important for us to remember is that God is in control. God is in control. And you know, so many times in our modern culture, you know, there are things that people do to try to guide their own life and govern their own life in some of these areas, and God is really in control of life. And he's the one that we have to look to. We read over in Psalm 127 and verse 3, it says, "Lo, children are an heritage of the Lord." That's an important thing for us to see. They're an heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. God says, "I'm in charge of this. I'm in control of this. I give children, and I can withhold children." And you know, you read through the Bible and you see different places where God withheld children for one reason or another. And he had his own perfect plan and all that. But here, this was a burden. And it was a problem in their family, and no doubt it probably caused some friction between Isaac and Rebekah, as it did with Jacob later on. Jacob and Rachel, they had squabbles over this very thing. And it was a heartache. And you read the story of Hannah, and Hannah and her husband, he kept saying, well, aren't I better than seven kids to you and all that. And yet she still longed for children. And there was a heartache there, and there was this problem, and there was difficulties in this situation. And so it really was a burden to them. And Isaac prayed, but we see here that as Isaac prayed, that God answered his prayer. God answered his prayer. And sometimes it is not God's will to give children to a family, and that's just God's choice. But Isaac and Rebekah here, in their case, they knew that God was going to give them children. Now, how did they know that? Well, you stop and think about it. What did God promised Abraham? He promised Abraham that his children would be as the sand of the sea. And I'm sure Abraham must have told Isaac. I mean, that'd be very unlikely that he didn't tell his own son these kind of promises from God. And so Isaac would have known that he was the chosen one. He knew that he had an older brother or half-brother, Ishmael. He knew that. And he knew that God had not chosen him to be the family line that would inherit the blessing and inherit all these promises of God. He knew that. So Isaac certainly knew all these things. And so Isaac must have been thinking, God, you promised Dad and that you were going to multiply our seed. And God, you haven't done that. And it's been 20 years now. God, when are you going to do that? And he prayed earnestly, and God finally, in his perfect timing, answered his prayer. You know, as you study the great men of the Bible, one of them that stands out in my mind as having very little information about their walk with God is Isaac. There's very little in the Bible about Isaac's walk with God. And I don't know, maybe I'm reading into it, but perhaps God was thinking in his own heart, Isaac is not walking very close to me. And I need Isaac to have some burden or trouble or trial that will bring him close to me. And perhaps God just allowed this in Isaac and Rebekah's lives to bring them closer to God. You think about Rebekah. Where did she come from? Padan Aram, up in the north. Now, remember when Abraham left Ur of the Chaldees? He left there because it was pagan. The people there were godless. They had turned their back on God. And Abraham seems to be the only one, or at least the only one we know of, that was godly amongst the bunch. And they get up to Padan Aram, and he leaves the rest of his relatives there in Padan Aram. And they certainly believed in Jehovah, but none of them seemed to be all that, really on fire for God. So Rebekah comes from a family that's kind of God believers, but not really all that solid in their walk with God. And Isaac doesn't seem to have a whole lot in his life that we can see anyway that evidenced that. So perhaps God was doing this. Perhaps he was just working in their lives to try to bring them close to him. And God delights in using problems to get our attention. We see that again and again and again. And as you look in the Bible, God uses those kind of things. You think, for example, in the book of Judges, what was the one thing that God did again and again and again to get the people's attention? Sent them troubles. Made them go into captivity. And when they got into captivity, then they cried out to God. You know, I'm sure that they were probably in captivity for a long time, and they're saying, why are we having all these problems? I mean, everything's going wrong, and the enemies are masters over us. And what happened to all these promises that God was going to? Oh, yeah, God, yeah. Oh, yeah, oh, maybe we better go back to God. He made all these promises to us, and they get on their knees, they get back to God, and God says, all right, thanks for coming back. All right, I'll answer your prayers now. And he sends them a redeemer. And it happened again and again and again and again because they just didn't learn. And you know, we go through the same thing today. You know, we get a little bit away from God, and then God sends some kind of a trouble into our life, wake us up and say, come on, get back right with me. And we draw close to God and things go well, and we drift off a little bit and get a little bit lazy again spiritually, and God sends something else to poke us again to keep us going. And that is God's way of keeping us in line. And sometimes, you know, none of us like troubles. And I'm sure that Isaac and Rebekah could have said, well, why do we have to go through this trouble? But God has a plan. And so every time a trouble or a problem comes into our home, our family, our lives, we need to remember to turn to God and say, God, is there something you're trying to teach me? Do I need to draw closer to you? If I've drifted away from you, am I spending not enough time in your word? What is it, God, you're trying to get a hold of me with? And then we can get on our knees and we pray. And, you know, one of the best things a married couple can do is to spend quality time in prayer together. I mentioned that this morning. Very, very important thing we need to do. Seeking God is what we really need to do. Jeremiah chapter 29 and verse 13, God says, "And ye shall seek me and find me when ye shall search for me with all your heart." What a verse. God says, you're going to find me when you search for me with all of your heart. And so we need to do that when we have troubles and burdens. And God, in this case, answered Isaac's prayer. God did give him a child. And that was an answer to their prayer. Then we find the second problem that came along, and that is, in Rebekah's life, she had an unusual pregnancy. Look at verse 22. And it says, "And the children struggled together within her. And she said, if it be so, why am I thus? And she went and inquired of the Lord." All right, now, as you look at this situation, it's her first pregnancy, and she knows something's unusual. You know, she's probably talked to lots of other ladies and said, you know, when you were pregnant, did you just feel like there was a battle going on down there all the time? No, not really. You know, I mean, I know my wife, when the kids, it was always interesting when the kids start moving and kicking and stuff, and it'd be, you know, you could feel a little kicking. But here she's feeling like, man, there's a war zone down in there. Something major wrong. Something different. And so she's confused. She doesn't know what to do. And, you know, in those days there was no ultrasound, so she couldn't go down to the local doctor and say, come on, find out what's going on here. And she had no idea she had twins. No way of her knowing that. And she did the wise thing. She prayed to God and asked for wisdom. She said, God, I need your help. I need to know what's going on. And we must never forget that our God knows all things and God cares about us. You know, whatever our problem may be, God cares about your problems. And we need to come to God about our problems, just as they did about the need for conception. Now she comes to God again about this problem that she can't figure out. Why do I have a war zone in my belly? And it's not, you know, something's funny here. This is odd. And so she prays and she talks to God about it. You know, our God is a great God. Just a few verses to remind us of that. Psalm 147 verse 5 says, "Great is our Lord and of great power. His understanding is infinite." We've got a great God. Another verse, Isaiah 40 verse 28. "Hast thou not known, hast thou not heard that the everlasting God, the Lord, the creator of the ends of the earth, fainteth not, neither is weary? There is no searching of his understanding." He knows it all. You can't figure out his understanding. He's beyond our comprehension. And then God told Jeremiah in Jeremiah 33 and verse number 3, he says, "Call upon me and I will answer thee and show thee great and mighty things which thou knowest not." You know, that is a great promise from God. And, you know, though he gave that promise to Jeremiah, certainly those are still true characteristics of God today. We can call on him and ask him. He can give us information. We can't get any other way. And God can give us peace in times of struggle. And God can help us. When we need wisdom and help, the best thing we can do is get on our knees before God and pour out our hearts to God and say, God, I need your wisdom. I need to know what to do. I need your help. And we seek God's wisdom. Now, God, in this case, answered Rebekah's prayer. Now, God doesn't tell us how, but we read in verse number 23, "And the Lord said unto her." Now, those words don't really reveal a whole lot except the fact that God told her something. Now, how did God do that? Did he come down in an audible voice and say, "Rebekah, wake up, I got to tell you something"? I don't know. He may have given it to her in a dream. It may have been a vision. They didn't have the Bible in those days. And sometimes we look at these stories in the Old Testament and think, that would be so good if God would just talk to me audibly and instead of just... But, you know, we really have a better way than they do, because that only happened rarely. You know, we have the pages of the scripture, and you see those different times when God spoke to different people, and it's almost like, wow, that happened all the time. No, it didn't. It was just very rarely. Whereas we have the whole Bible right before us. And every one of us can go and we can turn to these pages and find what God has for us. And he's So we really have a better situation now than they did in those days. But I have to admit, there's times that I've thought, boy, it sure would be nice for you to just talk to me audibly, God, and tell me the answer to my question. And somehow, God gave Rebecca the answer to her question. And it goes on in verse 23. And it says, two nations are in thy womb, and two manner of people shall be separated from thy bowels. And the one people shall be stronger than the other people, and the elder shall serve the younger. And she goes, ah, no wonder everything's so wild down there. There's two boys down and they're fighting. Right? And they're fighting from the womb. All right, from the time they're little tiny tykes inside, they're fighting with each other, and they're struggling, and God says there's going to be two nations among them. And God, in his omnipotent omniscience, God knew that those two inside of her would be opposite nations. They would be fighting nations. They would be enemy nations that would come along from the result of their children in years to come. And so God revealed that to her. God knew all of that before these boys were born. And he reveals that to Rebecca. And so that was an answer to her problem. She wanted to know what was going on. And now she knows, and she knows she's got twins coming and all of that. Now, as we read on, verse number 24, it says, and when her days to be delivered were fulfilled, behold, there were twins in her womb. And the first came out red all over like a hairy garment. And they called him Esau. Now let's stop there for a moment. So she has twin boys. And the first boy is born. And notice what it says about him. This is very interesting. It says that he was red all over like a hairy garment. All right. Now that's not usual. I mean, you don't see too many kids born that got hair all over the place. I mean, they have hair on their head sometimes. A lot of them don't have any hair on their head. But some of them have hair on their head, but not all over. And this, evidently, he was more like a dog or a cat, you know, with hair all over him. And it was red hair. And so they named him Esau. Do you know what Esau means? It means hairy. All right, so they named him Hairy. So Hairy, he's named Hairy because he's got hair all over the place, and it's red hair. I mean, that's kind of unusual for a Jewish boy to have red hair. But here's Red Hairy. And this is Esau that was born unto her. And as we follow his life through, we find out that Esau really had no interest in God. And he lived only for his flesh and didn't really do what was right. And he turned away from the things of God. But the second born was born with normal complexion. But he was doing something unusual. He was holding on to his brother's foot. As he was born, he somehow, I mean, usually little babies don't have that strong a grip, I don't think. But or maybe it even looked like he was holding on, but maybe he actually wasn't gripping. I don't know. But he was holding on to his brother's foot when he's born. That's an unusual thing to do. And so what did they name him? Well, they named him Jacob. And they tell us that Jacob means the heel holder. Huh, wonder how he got that name. All right. It also means supplanter. It means heel holder or supplanter. And supplanter means one who wrongly holds the place of another. And we find in Jacob's life, he was a deceiver. He was always doing things to trick his brother, and he deceived his brother two major times, but he had deception in other ways, evidently, in his life as well. And yet, you know, look at his life, and he did have a certain degree of fear of God. In his early days, it doesn't show a whole lot, but as he got older, you can see more of the evidence of his fear of God and his obedience to God as he got older in his years. But Jacob was the younger. And so these two boys grew, and as they grew, their interests were as diverse as their looks. Here's Red Harry over here, and he loved the field, and he loved hunting. He loved going out in the field, and he just said, I don't want to stick around home. I want to take on hikes. I want to go on hikes all the time. I want to go hunting. And he learned how to use his bow and arrow or slingshot or whatever he used for hunting. And he'd go hunting all the time. And he'd come home and he'd bring venison home to his dad. Venison is deer meat. So he'd shoot deer, and he'd bring the deer meat home to his dad, and his dad said, "Oh, this deer meat is so good. I really like that deer meat. That is awesome." And so this is Esau. Esau's the hunter. But Jacob, on the other hand, says that he was a plain man. All right, so as we look down here in verse number 27, and the boys grew, and Esau was a cunning hunter, a man of the field, and Jacob was a plain man dwelling in tents. All right, now as you look at this, it says he was a plain man. What does it mean he was a plain man? What does it mean that he was just ordinary looking fella? It doesn't mean that. The word plain there literally means whole or complete or full. One who is mature or upright in as one who is whole. Another description is that he is one who lacks nothing in his physical strength and beauty. And another definition is that he was just an ordinary or quiet sort of person. Another commentator put it this way. He says, the word is generally used of moral uprightness or integrity. And another says that he was an amiable or pious or cultured man. So all these things have to do with his plainness. Nothing, it wasn't just meaning he's just a boring type of a fellow or just an ordinary nobody. No, it means that he was one who was complete or whole. He had everything he needed to be what he ought to be a man's man and to be a good leader and to be all that God wanted him to be. And so he was a plain man. But he decided to stay at home and take care of the cattle and the sheep. He lived in the tent. And while Esau was out sleeping under the stars, while he was out hunting, Jacob's home, he sleeps in his tent. And, you know, he stays at home, and he evidently spent more time with the home garden and cooking and things of that nature. And some commentators would say, oh, he was just kind of a effeminate type of a sissy type of a boy, stayed home with mama. Well, I'm not so sure that's the case. That's not how he's described here. I think he's just a person who stayed home. He had a farm. He took care of the sheep and the cattle and the things of the farm and lived in the tent. It's just the idea is he's the opposite of his brother. His brother's out roaming the hillsides and in the forest and hunting the deer and sleeping under the stars, and Jacob's more of a normal guy. He stays home, has a tent, he lives in the tent, he takes care of his cattle, he has a garden, he's learned how to cook and various things of that nature, and take care of himself. And so Jacob was the one who stayed home. Now the parents, we find here, this all leads us to the third problem, and that is that Isaac and Rebekah played favorites. Not a good thing. And we see in verse number 28, and Jacob loved Esau because he did eat of his venison, but Rebekah loved Jacob. Now, not a good thing. These parents, I mean, Isaac really enjoyed the venison. He liked his, you know, wild type of a son that was out wandering the hillsides, coming back with crazy stories about his great adventures in hunting and how he did all this. And Isaac said, oh, I love that. That's awesome. I really like that. Son, come tell me some more stories. This is really great. And he liked the venison and all that. But Rebecca, she says, now I really like my son that stays at home. And he's got his little farm. And he's just a normal fella. And he's a man's man. He's leading the family. He's being a good, you know, he's a great guy. I really like him. So she loved Jacob. He loved Esau. And there was division and conflict. And you know, anytime there's those kind of things, and all of us, our parents know that when those kind of things happen, what happens? The kids always know who to run to when they get in trouble. You can be sure as Esau and Jacob were growing up and they'd get in an argument or something, and mom would say, all right, boys, straighten up. You're in trouble now. And Esau, he'd run to dad and say, Dad, mom's after me. Oh, come on, Rebecca, be easy on him. He's all right. He'd run to mom, or he'd run to dad because dad would defend him. And Jacob, he'd probably run to mom and say, Mom, you know, dad's trying to get me in trouble here because I did something. Oh, come on, calm down. And there was favorites here. It causes problems in the family. And it's really a disrupting thing to a home. You know, every child is unique. There's no question about it. And those of us who have had more than one, you know that every one of them is different. They all have their own personalities. They all have their own little ways. And some of them are more like we are, and some of them are more like our spouse, and some of them are a mixture of the two. And some of them we click with better than others. No question about it. But what do? Well, the right thing to do is to treat them all with love and not to choose favorites. Because no matter how tempting it is to mesh with the child that meshes with us, it causes trouble. And it's sometimes very difficult. But we need to help each one develop his own personality and his own traits and his own qualities and his own potentials. And that takes effort. And it takes discipline on our part, because we'd rather spend time with this one because we really get along well. And these over here, I don't see things like they do. But we've got to work with all of them equally. And that's all part of parenting. Isaac and Rebecca failed to do that, and it caused untold problems in their family that continued on all the way until the boys were fully grown, and it gave them much grief in their family. You know, we really need to, in this situation as parents, we need to follow God's example that we read about in Acts chapter 10 and verse 34, where Peter says, "Then Peter opened his mouth and said, 'Of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons.'" That's what we need to be as a family. You know, no respecter of persons. Every one of the kids all treated the same. And we work with them all equally. And we love them all equally, even though they're different. And even though we may really feel akin to one of them more than another because they're more like us. And you know that? I think of my three boys. And, you know, there's no question about it. One of them had a personality that was much like mine. And he liked the things I liked. One of them was more like his mom. And the other one was kind of a mixture. But we have to work with all of them. And it is more difficult to work with the ones that don't really blend with your personality as well. But we've got to work with that. And that's a real challenge. So there's another family problem that Isaac and Rebecca faced. And in their case, they didn't handle it very well. So we can learn from their mistakes in that way. Then the last problem, and this one is a very common problem, the boys were selfish. I don't think any of you boys are selfish, are you? No, I didn't think so. But boys are selfish. They're not just boys. Girls can be selfish too. And these boys were selfish. And Jacob selfishly wanted the birthright. Now, to us, that doesn't mean a whole lot. What was the birthright? Well, the birthright was a special blessing or special privilege given to the oldest son. And he was privileged to get a double portion of his father's inheritance. So when dad died, they would divide up everything. If there's five boys, they'd divide, let's do a four, that'd be easier. So if there was four boys, they'd divide it in half. One of them would get two parts, and the other three would get, anyway, get a double portion. I'm not dividing it very well. I'm not mathematically very cut. But anyway, he gets twice as much as the other boys. All right, that's an easier way to say it. So the oldest one gets twice as much as everybody else. And so Jacob was thinking, this just isn't fair. You know, and who knows why he thought that. You know, he may have thought, I was only seconds younger than him. It's not like he's a lot older than me. He was only born a few seconds before me. It's not fair. He may have thought, you know, I remember mom's told me, and mom probably did tell him, mom's told me what God told her before I was born, that the elder would serve the younger. And it really belongs to me. I'm really supposed to be the older one. I'm supposed to be the head one. And so I need to try to get that somehow. I don't know what all was clicking in his head, but he was selfish and he wanted that birthright. And you know, you think about, you read through this story, and some of you already know this story well enough that you can think about it as it is. And when Esau came in from the field that day, let's read down through it and I'll just get it. All right, in verse 29. And Jacob sod pottage. Sod doesn't mean the stuff on the ground, it means cooking. All right, so he's cooking pottage. Pottage was a bowl of soup, and it was probably a lentil soup. It was a red type of soup, probably lentils. And he's cooking lentil soup. And so Esau came in from the field, and he was faint. All right, he was so hungry, he says, I'm going to fall over and faint and die if I don't get some food. All right, and Esau said to Jacob, feed me, I pray thee, with the same red pottage, that I faint not, for I am faint. Therefore, his name was called Edom. And Jacob said, sell me thy birthright. And Esau said, behold, I am at the point to die. And what is the profit of this birthright do me? And Jacob said, swear to me this day. And he swore to him and sold his birthright to Jacob. And Jacob gave Esau bread and pottage of lentils. And he did eat and drink and rose up and went his way. Thus Esau despised the birthright. Now, you think with me. Jacob's cooking his soup there and he sees his brother coming. Do you think that just all of a sudden out of the clear blue he says, hey, you know, I should have that birthright. Here's my chance. I'll get it from my brother. I'll sell him some soup. I don't think so. I think this has been going through his mind for a long time. Maybe years. I got to get that birthright somehow, some way. I don't know how. Maybe that day, as he was cooking that soup, he was just frustrated and thinking about that. I just got to get that birthright somehow, I don't know how. And then his brother comes along and says, oh, I'm going to die. Give me some of your soup. He says, yeah, all right. How bad you want that soup? Sell me your birthright. Oh, who cares about that birthright? I'm about to die. Give me some soup. All right, sell me your birthright. Right, I promise you can have the birthright. Give me the soup. All right, he gave him soup. It's all right, he sold his birthright. Now, Jacob here is lusting after that birthright. He wants that birthright. That is what he is selfishly about. Esau, on the other hand, Esau was selfishly and lustful about his flesh. He just said, I want soup. I like that soup. It smells great, and I'm hungry. Now, you think with me. He's come in from his long journey. He's just dragging in home. He's hungry. He hasn't eaten for a couple of days maybe, and he's really, really hungry. Did he have to eat that soup? No. I'm sure that in the pantry they would have had raisins, dates, figs, all those kind of things in the pantry. There was probably apples in the barrel there. There was things he could have eaten. He could have grabbed something to satisfy his food until he could catch his breath and carry on. But no, he wanted it now. I want it now. I don't want to wait. I don't want no figs and grapes. I don't want that. I want that soup. That soup smells good. That's what I want. And he was just after his own flesh. And you know, the devil sometimes works in us like that. Selfishness. Selfishness. Remember what the scripture says? God says that. And then in Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5, he said, let your conversation be without covetousness and be content with such things as ye have. For he has said, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. What is God telling us in that verse? You know, often when I used to read that verse, I thought, that doesn't make sense. Why are those two things in the same verse? Be content and I'll never leave you. Well, here's the reason why. What's God saying? He's saying, I am all you need. You don't need anything else. If you have me, you've got all you need. And I will give you all you need. I am all you need. Do not lust after something else. Do not covet something else. I am all you need. And oh, how we need to remember that. And here, Jacob, he's lusting after that birthright. I want to be the chief. I want to get that double portion. I want that inheritance. And he's trying to scheme and plead, figure out ways that he can get that birthright. And Esau, he's only got one thought on his mind. I just want what makes me feel good. And it makes me feel good to get full. And I'm hungry. And that stuff smells good. And I want that soup. I don't care what it costs me. I want that soup. And he's just after his fleshly lusts. And you know, the devil's going to tempt you to do the same thing. He's going to tempt you to give up your purity to satisfy your sensual lust. He's going to say, don't worry about your purity. That's nothing important. You need this. This is what you need. And he'll deceive you. He's going to tempt you to give up your honest reputation to steal something that's not going to last. You know, you got an honest reputation, but then, but I want that, and I can't afford it, but nobody's looking. I can take that, and it won't last. No matter what you steal, it's not going to last. You know, children steal candy from the store. That doesn't last, but it makes them a thief. That lasts. But what they stole doesn't last. And he's going to tempt you to give up your godly testimony to gain the praise of others. That won't last. You know, the devil's always trying to get us to do something that doesn't last and convince us that this is really important. I've got to have it. God says, don't fall for that. Do not give up what is priceless for a bowl of soup. That's what Esau did. Harry, he gave up what was priceless. That inheritance was something that you could not buy. It was something that you inherited from your father. It was a treasure. And he gave that up for a bowl of soup that only lasted for one day. Filled his belly with it. The next day he was hungry again. He lost it all in just a day. Why? He gave it up for the lust of the flesh. We read over in 1 Timothy chapter 6 and verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. The Lord says, be godly and be content. That is what really counts. We don't need the things that this world has to offer. We don't need all the things that the devil tries to lure us with. And we need to remember that selfishness will get us in trouble. And folks, all of us are selfish to one degree or another. That's part of our sinful nature. Gets us in trouble all the time. And we need to just realize that God is all we need. If we could just get that concept down in our minds and in our hearts and our lives, God is all I need. I don't need that lustful thing. I don't need that sensual thing. I don't need to look at that stuff that I shouldn't look at. I don't need to take what isn't mine. I don't need that other relationship. I don't need all those things. All I need is God. God is all I need. And we need to hang on that tightly and say, that is all I need. God will meet my needs. Oh, how that'll help us so much in our problems. So when facing problems, we can learn a lot from Bible characters and like these that we've looked at here tonight. And we've seen here that when we have a need, we should pray like Isaac did. When we need wisdom, we need to pray like Rebecca did. When we are tempted to play favorites, we need to choose to love equally instead of following the bad example of Isaac and Rebecca. And when we're tempted to be selfish, we need to ask God to help us to be content with Him and what He provides.